Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good morning, it's John Williams here, weekdays 9 to 11. Not lately, though. Took some time off for Christmas vacation. Good to be back. Love Christmas, love family, love eating, love drinking. Done with it all, except for the family part. I love all of them, but, you know, you get to a point where you say, okay, I'm done.
I'm good.
That was pretty much all I need or didn't need. And so today, Friday, feels for some of us who are weaving our ways back into life. Maybe you ran into this yesterday. If you took Christmas off and worked the 26th, today's the 27th. It's Monday in my head. Mm-hmm. So while I'm not real good at times and dates and temperatures, what did you say it is, James? 33 degrees right now today. Be prepared for all sorts of wackiness to ensue from said host. By the way, 33 degrees. You do not get to complain about that, but it is about 20 degrees colder right now than it was this time yesterday. And yet still, 33, hello.
Take it.
I mean, this is where it's usually kind of... Producer Aleph, what is the average high temperature for today, please?
32 degrees, John.
And what was, that's 32. What was, and think about how warm it got Christmas Day. What was the average high temperature for Christmas Day?
32 degrees, John.
See what I'm talking about? And it got up into the 60s, depending on where you're listening to us. If you were in Peoria, I think you saw 64. If you were in Chicago, you saw 60-something.
Mm-hmm.
So Christmas Day, I tweeted out, what's the weirdest thing you saw or did relative to the weather? Griffin and I, my son, play tennis.
Oh, nice.
We were out there with short sleeves playing tennis. He was, anyway. We came up to the tennis courts just off of Waveland and Lakeshore Drive. That's the nearest ones to us, so we buzzed over there. Brenda went with us, and she went for a walk while Griffin and I played tennis. Playing tennis, and it was positively lovely. It was no hardship. We were sweating. We were stripping our outer garments as we went. It went really well. When we walked up to the courts, just to show you what kind of a quirky, weird day it was, Christmas 2019, as we're walking up to the courts, there's this hip dude with red plastic Sally Jesse Raphael frame glasses. Remember those?
Yep.
And he's got a fashionable tracksuit, and I'm going to guess he's 65 years old, but he's got a fun vibe. He's walking around with a boombox. And the boombox is blaring.
The summer wind came blowing in.
And he's singing.
From across the sea.
He's singing this song as he's walking down the pathway.
It lingered there.
He comes up to us.
To touch your
pauses.
Hair,
and then he says,
and walk with me.
So we just chuckle and say, hello, strange fella.
Summer long.
I'm telling you what, you went to a lot of Cubs games and White Sox games last year. The weather was not as nice as it was 12-26, 27, well, 25.
In April, they moved snow off the field at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Rain, it snowed two years ago pretty hard in the eighth inning on the south side. This segment is sponsored with Troy Murray by ChevyDriveChicago.com. How would you answer that, Mr. Hockey? What would you say about the weather? Are you enjoying this weather? It probably makes it easier for you, given the traveling, all right, Troy?
Well, you know what? I love it. Yesterday was an unbelievable day. I'm actually out walking the dog right now, a little cooler. But I'm from Canada, and I do like the seasons. I do like snow. But I'll take this for as long as we can get it.
Well, you do get the feeling, I think, if you're like me, certainly if you're like my wife, she's in the back of Brenda's mind, it's like, oh, someone's keeping score. and we're not talking God here. It's just nature that there will be hell to pay come February. Yes. Or, you know, at some point, the score evens out, right?
Wasn't it last year, kind of near the end of January, that we had the polar vortex
come down? Yes, it was.
And that was darn cold.
I remember well because I was in southwest Michigan. I was in New Buffalo. And we're just...
I love that town.
It's a really fun area. Love a lot about it. Do you spend time over there, Troy?
You know what? I have a boat slip over there. I don't have a boat at this point, but I was up there for years, and I still have my boat slip.
How does that work? You get a boat slip, And that's what you want to keep, even if you don't have a boat. That's the precious commodity.
It is. You know, I ended up renting it. I rent it every summer. It's a great area. The town, I mean, this is going back to the mid-'80s when I bought the slip. My agent, it was a guy named Buddy Meyer, who lives up on one of the stops just south of New Buffalo. We both bought slips together. It would be before construction, just to the right of the bridge as you're headed down towards the lake. Love the area. You know, and then it just kind of got to the point where I had kids and didn't need the boat anymore, but I kept the slip. Just loved the area.
All right, Andy Mazur, we've put off talking about hockey as long as I possibly can.
Can we keep talking about New Buffalo?
I don't know. What's your take as we turn the corner now? Is the season still salvageable, Troy? Where's your head on this? Especially given the injuries that we've just experienced.
Yeah, this is it's kind of a tough one to swallow with all the injuries, the major injuries to Calvin Hahn and Brent Seabrook. You know, Calvin Hahn, I thought before his injury, was playing some of his best hockey that I've seen him play, and Brent Seabrook. You know, you look at his situation, a little bit different just because of the fact that he's a veteran player, but he means so much to the group inside the room, and he's such a leader and such a presence there that you'll certainly miss that moving forward. And then throw Brandon Saad's high ankle sprain in there. He's out for another 3 weeks. And you kind of look at what happened on the game prior to the holiday break, 7-1 loss against the New York Islanders. And, you know, after two great games against Winnipeg and Colorado on the road, they come back and lay an egg like that. You know, they would have been at 500 if they had won that game. Now they're two games under. You just look at the rest of the season. I think this is their 38th game tonight. You know, so almost at the halfway point, they've got to put a good string together right now. And the one thing that has been mind-boggling all season long is the inconsistency of this team from one game to the next.
Yeah. That 7-goal game was a reality check we didn't want. Maybe it was just a one-off. Maybe it was a fluke.
You know what? And I said this before on the air before that game. I always felt that as a player, it was much easier to play that last game before the break on the road. You've got family, you've got travel plans, you've got everything kind of in order. There's a lot of distractions around this time of the year, ticket demands, people to come into the game, you know, family, friends in town, whatever it is. For the hometown people, it's a bigger distraction. For the visiting team, listen, they're in a hotel. They know that they don't start until the next day as far as the break. You don't have family there, so you can focus on the game. And I just thought that the focus, the way that the game went, it just was very apparent that the Blackhawks didn't have the focus that they needed to. And that was one of my keys to the game, to finish this game off strong before the break, because that is a reality. Uh-huh. And you know, it kind of came to fruition about how the team played, with just lack of energy and passion. And I just didn't see that coming, because I thought that after two really solid games and the way that they came back and scored 4 goals in the last 8.5 minutes against a team that had never lost in regulation when leading into the third period, let alone the 2-goal lead with 10 minutes to go, I just didn't see it coming. So it was very disappointing. And as everybody said in the room, and Jeremy Colliton said after, it was an embarrassment, and it was.
Hey, Troy, obviously you never want to see guys get hurt and be out for the season with DeHaan and Seabrook, but the blessing, I think, kind of underlying is the fact that Boqvist now and Dennis Gilbert, you get to see these guys a little more, don't you?
Well, there's always a positive to everything that happens, and the bright side for the Blackhawks and some of these younger players are certainly going to take a more significant role here moving forward. And you look at the leadership and the experience that both DeHaan and Seabrook bring to the table, somebody's going to have to fill that void inside the locker room. And, you know, for a young guy like Kirby Dach, who's played extremely well here in the last little while, it seems like, you know, he's gaining some more experience and learning how to play at this level. You know, maybe he's a guy that you know, takes a bigger role inside the room and fills that void. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of different issues for the guys playing on the ice now without those two guys, because when Boqvist gets back, he's banged up right now too. When he comes back, he's going to be expected to play a much bigger role and fill bigger minutes in key situations that otherwise he probably wouldn't have that experience in. So there is a positive, there is a bright side of this, that the young guys are going to get an opportunity to show what they can do. Yeah.
You know, the Duncan Keith comments after a couple of games ago about bringing it more and being a little more physical, is that something that a team can just kind of turn on and turn off? Because it looked like they turned it on quite a bit there. There was a lot of hitting going on in both of those games that they won.
Yeah, I thought that they played the right type of hockey. They were all engaged. I think Dennis Gilbert has really done a nice job of sparking this team physically, an element that they haven't had in a long time. In his short time here in the NHL, he's already had four fights, which ties him for fourth third in the league. But it just brings a little bit of an element that they didn't have. And when you see how they can play when everybody's engaged in the right way, you get good results against good teams in Winnipeg, in Colorado. And you saw that they stuck together. They were playing as a team. And that emotion and energy that Duncan Keith was talking about, it doesn't mean that you have to go out there and fight all the time or anything like that, but it's mentally engaged and being prepared to compete and win 50-50 puck battles and have the right energy from shift to shift with every guy, just not the Andrew Shaws or something like that. When he's in the lineup, you need it from everybody, and you saw that for two straight games. And then just a lack of commitment by basically everybody to engage in that area against the New Jersey Devils. It was kind of mind-boggling.
Guys, I got 30 seconds. We got the Islanders, 7 pregame, 7:30. We drop it tonight. Here on WGN Radio, Andy, how's this game going to go?
Well, it looks good. I mean, Robin Leonard gets to face his old team tonight, doesn't he, Troy?
Yeah, I think he's going to get the start tonight. I think he's excited for it. There was a little bit of bad blood, I think, between him and the organization this summer when they were the best defensive team. They won the Jennings Trophy as the best goals against average or goals against, the fewest goals against in the NHL last year. So for Robin Leonard, it's going to be a big game. He's out to show the Islanders he did wrong. And I think for the entire team, realizing where they are right now, this is a massive game for them moving forward because they've got a three-game road trip coming up after the game.
All right, let's step it up, guys. Nice to hear you. Say hi to John Forrest and have a good call tonight.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Always love it.
Yeah, we do too.
Have you seen this trend about trying to sum up 2019 in 5 words? Jussie made me work hard.
Oh, my God, that is so good.
Yeah, you know, in any roundup of the top Chicago stories, and probably would go on some national stories, too, that's got to be one of the top 5 stories of the year here in Chicago. Jussie says, Netflix was my best friend. Trump fatigue overtakes the country.
I like colors, yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about this.
Thank you, John Hanson, filling in for me yesterday and some of the other days. Frankly, I lost track. I've been gone for a while.
Life is short and sweet.
That's pretty good, though. 5 words to describe the year. And Netflix was my best friend or whatever. Trump fatigue, you know, that was if you said, because that's one thing that unites everybody. You're a fan of the president, you're not a fan of the president. Both sides are just like exhausted by all of this. I don't know what's going to happen November of 2020, but it's been exhausting, that's for sure. By the way, in the Tribune the other day, they had a story about Dr. Jeremiah Stalmer at Northwestern University, who goes to work every day as a researcher at Northwestern. He is 100 years old. He is 100 years old. And he's a professor doing research about aging and about how to live a long life. He was an early adopter of the Mediterranean diet. A lot of the things that he's been saying we ought to do if you want to live a long, healthy, happy, productive life, he has been doing. This is a fascinating story. I won't go into it here, but if you are looking for 7 pages of good reading by Cindy Dampier in the Chicago Tribune, at age 100, the father of preventive medicine is still going strong as living proof that he was right all along. No kidding. 100 years old. So I got this book called The Body by Bill Bryson. He's a writer who a lot of you know for his travel writing. He also wrote a book called A Short History of Nearly Everything, where he talks about the universe, the cosmos. Now he talks about things very much more personal to us, our human being bodies. He says, a study in 2016 concluded that however much medical care may advance, it is unlikely that many people will ever live past about 115 years. That's about as long as we can go, 115. On the other hand, a researcher at the University of Washington thinks young people today may routinely live up to 50% longer than people do now. Given advances in medicine, given advances in nutrition, given advances in I don't know what all. I don't know that I want to live to be 150, unless you can tell me at 100 I'm as good as I am now at 50, right? Like, I would take 50 for 50 more years. I would take 60 for 50 more years. You would take 70. But if you're 88, if you're 97, and you can live for 50 more years, how much are you loving that? I don't know that you are. Dr. Aubrey de Grey, he writes, a chief science officer at a research foundation in Mountain View, California, believes some people alive right now will live to be 1,000. This is just silly talk. But there it is. Richard Cawthorn, a geneticist at the University of Utah, has also suggested that that's theoretically possible. But really, there's no point in living to be 150 or 1,000. I'm not sure 125 is a good number. For one thing, we can't afford it.
Good point.
I mean, if you stop working, that means the retirement age is going to be about 130. I don't want to work for 95 years.
Can you imagine if it was 1,000, the retirement age would be, what, about 885?
No, they'd still be retiring at 56. Okay. And then we would have to support them for 900 years. You know, Noah did not live that long. At present, only about one person in 10,000 lives to be 100. At present, if you are 110, that's called the supercentenarian. And it says here 70 supercentenarians are alive today that they know of. There may be as many as double that, but your chances of living to your 110th birthday are about 1 in 7 million. It helps if you're a woman. Women live longer, 10 times more likely to reach 110 than a man. Again, I'm not sure that you want to, but there you are. Women have always outlived men. The longest lived person we know of was Jeanne, J-E-A-N-N-E. She's French. Jean or Jean-Louise Calment of Arles in Provence, who died in 1997 at the age of 122. She was the first person known to live to be 122, 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, or 116. She, by 5-6 years, lived longer than anybody was ever known to have lived. She had a leisurely life. Her husband was rich. Her father was rich. I don't know if that helped. She didn't stress. She didn't have to work her body that hard. But she smoked up to her last day. So think about that. She smoked for over 100 years. She smoked for probably 110 years. And she ate 2 pounds of chocolate a week.
Oof.
Longest lived person on earth. So I don't know what bad habits you have, but you ain't been smoking for 100 years. So good for you. All of that in Bill Bryson's book. It's called The Body. Some of you are still playing the five words that describe 2019 game. John, my five words for 2019. John Hansen asked you this yesterday. John, my five words for 2019 are more wine for me, please. My words for today are less wine for John, please. Been enjoying my holiday. Even had some holiday cocktails. Ate some good food. Ate some really good cookies. I don't know if you follow me on Facebook, but we posted a ginger spice cookie recipe, which isn't maybe anybody's go-to cookie. It's not mine, but Brenda made these with then this white kind of buttercream icing with a little bourbon or brandy in there, just enough to give it some flavor. Not kick, just flavor. Oh, my word, were those good. I mean, if you don't bake, bake these. If you're not going to bake these, find someone who will bake them for you. You will thank me, or not, because they're so dang good. Love those cookies. What were you saying?
I was telling my cousin's wife, Edith, about this, because she got another recipe from the New York Times
That's top where Brenda
five.
Found these, yeah.
And did you see the spaghetti with chickpeas recipe?
No, but that sounds good.
She made it the other night for us, and it was so good. But yeah, I mean, based on that, I'm sure that these cookies are really good.
The recipes from the New York Times really are, it's like they're vetted just by public opinion, because then they give them a star rating. I believe these cookies had a 5-star rating. Like, how hard is it for a cookie to get a 5-star rating? You're a cookie, but still, a 5-star rating from the New York Times. And those people are very particular. Was it a red sauce or a white sauce with the chickpeas and the pasta?
Like a clear white sauce.
Yeah. That sounds good. They're all, it seems to me, we've had really good luck. I'll just say that. And by we, I mean Brenda has had really good luck. I've had really good luck eating the food Brenda makes from the New York Times lists. And if it gets 5 stars, that tends to be exceptional. The other funny thing about the New York Times people that are always commenting is if you made a grilled cheese sandwich, say it hadn't been invented, and the New York Times was presenting to you grilled cheese sandwich, they would say, here's what you do. Butter a couple slices of bread, put it in the skillet, throw some American cheese on there, fry that bad boy up, and that's just a slice of heaven. It's a really good sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the New York Times, the comment section would be, I did not have yellow cheese or orange cheese. I didn't have American cheese. So I got this, and then I changed it this way. And we use this percent fat in the butter. And people are always tweaking it and micro-analyzing and managing the recipes. And in a way, showing off, but in a way, just sharing. Hey, here's what I did, and this was what worked for me. And those cookies were really good.
I definitely feel like I have the right to show off if I've made a really good meal. So I can kind of see that.
John, my 5 words for 2019, more wine for me, please. John, about that lady who lived to be 122, there is some evidence that Calmet was not 122 when she died. Yeah, I believe that, too. I mean, people that old, sometimes birth records are not all of that good. She may have taken her mother's identity, said somebody else. People with money have a better chance of living longer because they can afford health care. I want to live a healthy life no matter what age. Bill Bryson says that is true. There's a variety of factors that go into how long you live, your genes, your health care. But one thing that is inescapable is the material wealth you have access to says so much about the probability that you will live a long life. And it's not just healthcare, too. In some areas, it means that if you're living in a poor area, you're going to get shot, and that will reduce your longevity as well. He also said that in a lot of the richer countries, people are living a lot longer. The United States tends to be an exception, though. Our mortality rates aren't as good as they are in other parts of the world for a variety of reasons, but clearly access to health care. One of the things he points out is how fantastically inefficient our health care spending is. For the amount of money we spend on health care in this country and what we get for it, there is zero bang in the buck. Other countries like Japan or Sweden, countries with private health care or national health care, they seem to get more for their health dollar than we do in the United States. It's not a book all about that, but certainly that's one of the things he writes about when he writes about the body. On a less important note, one of the funny stories that's making news today is that in that Home Alone 2, Lost in New York with Macaulay Culkin, there's a scene where little Kevin comes up in a hotel, and there's Donald Trump, and he says, hey, can you do we have that scene, Elif? Can you play the scene for us from Home Alone 2?
Excuse me, where's the lobby?
Down the hall and to the left.
Thanks.
Hey, that's a familiar voice, but it's a younger version of the president. Asked about it this week, he said it was an honor to be in the movie. But the outrage was that in Canada, when they broadcast that movie now, they don't show that scene. And so some people assumed, and Fox Morning Show sort of fueled this fire, that it was cut because the president is controversial. But that scene has been cut for years. 7 or 8 minutes are cut from the movie. And the scene in which the president is there, I believe that is it in its entirety, runs just a handful of seconds. So you could argue either way, that they could have left the scene in, or you've got to find 8 minutes. That wasn't a consequential scene. Macaulay's going to get where he's got to go. So it was cut. And remember, all of this happened in 2014 or 15, long before Donald Trump was running for office. He's always a controversial or interesting figure. That's why he was in the movie. The other reason they say that Trump appeared in that movie and had cameos in some others is that when they shot a film at one of his properties, a caveat was always that he got to be in the movie. You or I might afford ourselves the same luxury. Matt Damon and some other movie stars say that movies in which they were filmed at Trump properties require that the now president get a chance to be a walk-in on the film. I don't have any problem with that either way, but I also see why if you got to find 8 minutes, that scene could go. But now people are suggesting that it was written out because it's Donald Trump. And the evidence seems to contradict that. Sometimes scenes in scenes in movies or TV shows are cut for commercial reasons. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. And frankly, the little bug for me for the last several years, this is a big deal about 20, maybe 11, 12, 13, right around there, when Charlie Brown's Christmas was cut from 24 minutes to 22 minutes. The TV show that was the epitome of the problem of commercialization at Christmas time was cut to add more commercials to the TV show. They cut a couple of scenes. And I was outraged. It doesn't seem to be such a big deal now because everything is available essentially in one form or another. You can find it in its entirety, uncut, on YouTube or wherever you want. So maybe that's not such a big deal anymore. But at the time, it sure bugged the heck out of me that a Charlie Brown Christmas was cut a couple of minutes from that show. I went to watch it on demand over break. And that 22-minute show is 1 hour long with commercials. They just come to a scene and they randomly stopped. And then there was commercials. I understand commercials, but that's ludicrous. You read it through about this a little bit deeper, and you find that another thing they do these days in order to get more commercial content in on reruns of shows like Friends or Seinfeld, Two and a Half Men, whatever, is they speed it up just a little bit. You don't notice it, but the shows are sometimes played as much as 7% faster in order to make them shorter in order to get in more commercials. I never noticed. Speaking of making donations to worthwhile causes, the goal for my virtual kettle for the Salvation Army. We did this the week before Christmas. Were you listening then? We had a big drive. Actually, the virtual kettle went up before Thanksgiving. We started talking about it after Thanksgiving. If you went to WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, there is a link to a virtual red Salvation Army kettle. With your credit card, you could make a donation. And it was coming along fine. I think by midweek, the week before Christmas, we were at about $7,000. Our goal was $35,000. So we took 2 hours of my second-to-last show before Christmas, and we said, what can we do to raise as much money for the Salvation Army as we can? Lou Manfredini has been a great supporter of and instigator of this idea. And he and his hardware stores and his wife and Lou made a nice donation. And then David Hochberg, crazy David Hochberg, comes in at the end of the show for an hour, hour and a half. And he really drove us hard. And he said, come on, you guys, let's make donations. A lot of our sponsors stepped up. $35,000 was our goal. Producer Olive, where are we? And it's still up. I think it's up until right after the first of the year. Where is our kettle, please?
69,871, John.
69,871. So if we get $129, we will be at exactly double what our very ambitious goal was. Once again, thank you all for making your donations. About the president not being in Home Alone 2, at least in Canada. John, I saw Home Alone and saw that that scene with Trump is still in there, says 815. Well, this is the Canadian broadcasting company's airing of it. I presume they do it with it what they want, and we do with it what we want, our networks and theirs. But at least up there, which is kind of weird, because who cares what Canada thinks anyway about Donald Trump? He's not their president. And again, what I believe is the correct reporting on this is that it has nothing to do with him being a candidate or the president anyway. This happened a long time ago in Canada. 630, John, would Donald Trump technically get royalties from that movie? My guess is not. John, remember when pay and cable TV were supposed to give us programming without commercials? Yeah, right. The same way I would add that nuclear power was supposed to give us endless energy and there would be no problems, no pollution, nothing could go wrong. Nuclear power. 847, John, I don't understand this mania to eradicate anything that has to do with President Trump. Like it or not, he's the president. Don't forget, 63 million plus Americans voted for him. The problem is 66 million Americans didn't vote for him. And I think that's the problem for both sides, that if the president reminds us of the 63 million, and his supporters rightly do so, it's an electoral college that elects the president, but you're supposed to be president of everybody. And it's very divisive in this country right now, isn't it? You see that Lindsey Vonn got engaged to PK, is it Subban? Subban? S-U-B-B-A-N?
Yeah, you got me on that.
You don't know Subban? S-U-B-B-A-N. He's a New Jersey Devils hockey star. They're a lovely couple. They've been dating for a while. And he proposed to her some time ago, and now she has proposed back to him. She has given him an engagement ring. According to a story in the Washington Post, she said, "We talk about equality, but actions speak louder than words. Men should get engagement rings too, and this is what PK deserves." So hers was just a sort of reciprocal sort of thing. Technically, they got engaged via the traditional means, the guy proposes to the girl. According to the wedding planning site The Knot, 97% of grooms and heterosexual couples report proposing to their brides. 3% of the time, the women propose to the men. You know, in this day and age, I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often.
Right.
I'm interested in unusual proposals. December is the proposingest month. But is it starting to reverse? They say there's two things that happen now. One is the mutual proposals. I don't know exactly how that works because we can't mutually surprise anybody with an engagement ring. But couples live together before they get married more now anyway. I guess there's no real surprise, but it's a mutual thing.
I think a lot of couples talk about it way ahead of time.
Absolutely.
Especially now.
Absolutely. Especially since now they're living together in sin.
Yeah.
Only about a third of all marriages, according to the group, only about a third of all marriage proposals in the United States are actually a surprise, according to The Knot. Why aren't women proposing to their boyfriends, said Lindsey Vonn. And I just wonder if that is happening. I wonder how that, by the way, that means then she doesn't get a big diamond ring or a small diamond ring. He gets a wedding band, maybe with a stone in it. But I think that's a tradition that probably the industry is not going to love. It's 10:15. This is WGN. My number is 312-981-7200. Thank you, 708. John, it's pronounced Subban. Appreciate that. So you can tell I'm not a hockey guy. I'm a hockey guy for the Blackhawks, but do I watch other games with other teams? Do I know other players? No. John, you would know more of this than me, but hasn't the purpose of the Electoral College outlived itself? Well, I think in Chicago, most folks would say it absolutely has. In Montana, they would feel differently. 708, it's only divisive, John, in this country because the Democratic population won't accept the outcome of the election. 7 exclamation points. Thank you, 708. You can make Sundays your official night to tour the city, watch Chicago's Best at 10, and then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 on WGN-TV. But other than how to pronounce Subban, no texts yet on ladies proposing to guys. Only 3% of the population, they say, does it. And the business of mutual proposals, which I guess I'm not exactly sure what that means, although I think a lot of us just sort of came to the conclusion it's time to get married, and you talk about that with your girlfriend or boyfriend, your fiance, say, your partner, and then you decide to get married. It's not a big lift up the chafing dish top at the restaurant, and there is not chafing dish, but the plate, and you have a little cap on it. You pull that off, and there's a diamond ring. John, 42 years ago, my wife and I one day said, "I guess we're getting married. Why don't we go buy rings?" And we did. Sadly, that's the way it was for me. And if I could do that over again, I would. Morning, King John. How long will it take the jewelry industry to add men's engagement rings? It'll be a new trend. Everything's a trend. John, it doesn't mean brides will give up their engagement rings, though. I guess so. I mean, the ladies look great with diamonds, and that's a tradition. But it would seem to me like this would sort of jeopardize that if ladies started asking men to marry them. You give him a ring, I don't think it's going to be a big sparkly diamond. At some point, I guess she gets one, but when and how does that work out? John, for what it's worth, my niece proposed to her wife. I noticed in the article they said heterosexual couples, because maybe with same-sex couples this happens differently. For what it's worth, my niece proposed to her wife, and then several months later, her wife proposed to her. They both exchanged rings. I'm not sure if it's a new tradition in general or a trend in the gay community. A trend, because for a long time, gay couples, partners weren't able to get married anyway.
I actually saw that happen on the Ellen show. She brought in two guests who were a gay couple, and one of them had already proposed to her fiancé, and the other one decided to surprise her with the whole family on the stage and proposed there on the Ellen show back to her.
Yeah.
Which is cool, I think. You both get rings.
I guess two women get rings.
Major perk.
So there's that. But it's not a surprise because you've already agreed to get married. So my proposing to you isn't such a grand gesture. I've already said yes, but hey, maybe whatever works for you.
I like the idea of getting a ring for both of them. I mean, it's going to be much more costly as a woman, but and we still don't get equal pay, but
It would be fun to give.
Yeah.
I did not see anybody proposing on the lake, although I saw just about everything else when Brenda and I were walking along the lake yesterday. I told you about that guy that was walking around with the boombox and the red glasses playing Frank Sinatra's Summer Wind because it was like that. That was on Christmas Day. Then the next day, we go for a walk by the lake, and we saw a family grilling out. They got the truck, pick-em up truck. They put their Weber grill back there. They got the blue snap-out nylon chairs. They had, you know, the whole setup, music and everything, the food, the grill was going. It was charcoal briquettes and lighter fluid, just like you see in the summer. December 26th, we see that on the lake yesterday. The funny thing is that it was warm enough to do that, but there was just enough chill in the air that they all had on like their winter coats. So they're sitting in the chairs with winter coats on, sitting around the grill because you could. Short while later, we see three ladies sitting in similar chairs, kind of a half moon semicircle there, with a big hookah thing out. And they're all taking puffs on the hookah and just enjoying the nice day. But again, they were bundled up in their coats because they were sitting there for a while. Lots of people kicking soccer balls around, skateboarding, bicycling. It was just so weird and nice. I asked you what were some of the unusual things that you did because of the weather being so warm. Plenty of you got out and washed your car. No kidding. I saw motorcyclists. I saw plenty of motorcycles lately. I did not see a convertible, although I think this is the kind of weather that would lend itself to people with convertibles zipping out because they can. Don Kleppen is in traffic. Don, you were tossing the football around for December 25th, 26th, am I right?
Yes, sir. Up in Milwaukee, actually, where it was pretty similar to here. Left Morton Grove that morning around 11, and it was just kind of nice all the way.
Yeah, it was Griffin and I played tennis. I'm just trying to think of some of the other scenes and things that I saw. I was actually thinking about washing my car, and it was so nice. I didn't want to do that. But it was the flip side is the bad part, right? The people that got skates or sleds for Christmas. I did not walk over to the Chris Kindle Market at Wrigley Field, but Elif and I both live very near there, and they've got that outdoor skating rink, and I presume that was operational. They've got the coils under the ice, so that works. But in a way, it was almost like the antithesis of Christmas weather. That's why we asked in our news click, how do you feel about these unusually high temperatures? And 57% of you said, yep, I'm enjoying every minute of this. 57%. You had four options. B was, yeah, this is great. But it's another sign of global warming. Some of you are a little uneasy about this. Honestly, I'm in that camp.
Yeah, you wait for the other shoe to drop. Can't help but think, you know, nothing's free. You're like, oh, when's it coming?
Well, there's that, too. I mean, and actually, I don't even know that we accommodated that feeling, but I think that's where a lot of you are, is, oh, this is nice, but somebody's keeping score. We're going to have heck to pay when it comes due. I was just thinking about it in terms of, this is really nice, I'm enjoying it, But the price we're paying is not colder weather, say, in January or February, but just the weather is too warm. It's wrong. It's bad for the planet.
Oh, right. Yeah, like the long term.
Yeah, this is like, well, yeah, it's great global warming because we're enjoying it in December 2019. But our kids and grandkids, this is not going to be the anomaly. This is going to be the reality. And right. The consequences are going to be who knows what. Your third option was, no, I'd like some snow, especially on Christmas. I would be there, too, by the way. I've been every now and then chiming in going, hey, would a couple of inches kill us? 25 degrees and some snow? I would love that.
Yeah, it was more of a California Christmas, and we...
Totally.
We live here.
Totally. You know? When I see those scenes, I think, no, I like our version better. I like the four seasons. Mm-hmm. 14% of you said that. I'd like some snow, especially on Christmas. And nope, I'm scared about global warming, period. Under no circumstances do I enjoy this. Maybe that was a category I was referring to. That was 4% of you. So there is the rundown on the news click. Okay, so more about people proposing. This is John Williams. Good morning. Hope you had a good break. Hope you're still having a good break. Hope you never go back to work. Just have a swell life and lay around and leisurely listen to the radio. I wish that for you. Now you'd get bored. It's 10:37. By the way, we were talking about people getting engaged, and then Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic from the Chicago Tribune, after just one quick engagement story from Nick. Hi, Nick. You're on the air. How are you?
John, I'm great. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Is this Nick from Whiskey Acres?
That's me.
How was your season? How was sales? This is the award-winning distillery in Illinois. Is a place called Whiskey Acres. They grow their own corn. They distill their own whiskey and bourbon. They've got their name on a maple syrup, which is delivered in barrels that bourbon was made in.
Did you have pancakes for Christmas dinner?
In fact, I did for Christmas breakfast. I made pancakes so we could use the last of that syrup. Is that syrup commercially available still?
You can get it through the front door of our visitor center. There's also a place in Geneva called the Royal Wren that carries it. And that's about it for now.
Okay, guys, just so you know, am I right? It was the old bourbon barrels, right?
Bourbon barrels filled with maple syrup, aged for several months, then barrels emptied, syrup bottled, then the barrels refilled with some more bourbon to rest in bourbon maple syrup barrels for a while.
So you get a maple-y bourbon and you get a bourbon-y maple syrup. Is there an alcohol content to the maple syrup?
It's negligible.
Right. I mean, I didn't smell it or certainly feel it or taste it. But, well, you taste the bourbon. I mean, it's got this remarkable flavor, this maple syrup that's aged in a bourbon cask. Can you imagine? It's like two of the best things in the world. And then you pour that on a pancake. So we had those the other day and for the express purpose of doing the syrup. And we're out now. I took a picture of the empty bottle. I was going to send it to you just to let you know how much we enjoyed it, Nick. That's a wonderful product you have.
Thank you. And the good news is we took a shipment of quite a few more a couple weeks ago. So we can refill your pantry if we need to.
Well, I think you should refill everybody's pantry. If I want to get it, how do I get the syrup again?
You can come visit us at our visitor center in DeKalb. We're open on the weekends, or you can, specifically for the syrup, you can also go visit our friends at the Royal Rend, just off of 3rd Street in downtown Geneva.
I've taken too much of your time now. My next guest, Phil Vitale's on hold. Just quickly tell me your engagement story.
Okay. I'll be quick here. So a little bit of a backstory. My wife and I used to work in the same office, and I was planning this engagement. So I had to tread lightly. Fast forward, we flew to... the Outer Banks, had a big house on the beach with a group of friends.
Yeah.
I had made arrangements with her best friend to execute this, which involved me getting a treasure chest, a whole bunch of fake gold coins and silver jewelry, and a real ring. Gave it to her best friend, had her best friend go bury it in the sand while the rest of us had some after-dinner cocktails. Then I got Amanda cocktailed enough to decide it was a good idea to go out on the beach and take my dad's metal detector to go look for some treasure.
Oh.
And she had the metal detector and the headphones on, and there's more garbage on that beach you could ever imagine because about every 10 seconds we had to stop to dig.
Yeah, right.
It was the longest beach walk of my life. And And so at one point, I just turned the stupid thing off.
And so here, let's just dig, yeah.
Yeah, let's just dig. And then we got to a spot on the beach that had like a big heart drawn on it. And I said, why don't we turn this on and let's go see what happens here. And she rolls over it and it makes, you know, makes the money noise. And so she's got a big belt on that's got a, you know, a sifter and a shovel. And she takes a few digs and comes across something. She digs a little more and picks up. Like comes across a treasure chest. It's got a skull and crossbones on top of it. She picks it up and blows the sand off the top like a scene from a movie. Flips it open, sees a ring in there, and she goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Somebody's getting married. We've got to put this back. and I was able to say,
yeah.
They are. It's us.
Yeah, and they are.
I got the appropriate response, and 10 years later, we're living a wonderful life.
Oh, boy, Nick. Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thanks for your story.
Thanks, John. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
Take care. Phil Vitel's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. Can you top that, Phil?
No, I don't think I can top that.
Did you do something special? Took your wife to a lovely restaurant, so you being a restaurant critic and all?
No, you know, we had been... we'd been living together for several years at that point, and it just sort of came up in conversation.
Yeah.
And we started thinking about timing because she was finishing up her PhD work, and I was already working for the Chicago Tribune. And you know, I mean, it was probably the least romantic, most practical conversation you could ever imagine.
Well, she's
and
a PhD
when we figured
candidate.
Out, we said, hey,
yeah.
Does that mean we're engaged? And yeah, we were.
Ta-da. Yeah, well played, Phil. Well, but you know, I've met your wife. She's lovely, very intelligent lady. You strike me as practical people, so I'm not entirely shocked to hear that's how it went down.
Yeah.
I have a list that you have. You did this last year. Do you do this every year where you make reservations at the most impossible to get into restaurants for New Year's Eve? How does this work?
Yeah, I started doing this, honest to goodness, 1994. And it began very, 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 very modestly with a few restaurants that said, "Hey, well, how about we'll save a table for your readers?" So I thought, "Oh, that was a pretty cool idea." So I started developing it, and every year a few more places wanted to get on board. And we actually did not do we didn't do it in 1999 because everybody was freaking out about Y2K. And New Year's Eve reservations were early reservations were dismal. Everybody had room. And 2000 we sort of got out of the habit, and then I brought it back in 2001. And ever since, and restaurants they hold a table for me, and then we release that information on a specific day, and then people can call and ask for that table and get the reservation.
First come, first serve, huh?
Right, and it's not a free anything. It's just the right to dine. You know, it's just a good table at a good time.
What do you know? I can get into Aviary, but I still have to pay $225 to eat there.
Oh yeah, yes, you will pay.
But boy, you know, what a great restaurant! Yeah.
Right, and the nice thing is, when I do the listing, I list what the restaurant is, what they're doing, whether it's sort of their regular menu or something fancy, and what you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
So people can call, with all that important information in their head as to what time is available and what it's going to cost them.
Okay, so I have the list here. I'm not going to read all 160 of them, but I did mention the Aviary, and you wrote. Table for two, 9:15 p.m., celebratory five-cocktail experience with food and midnight champagne toast, $225, 955 West Fulton Market. This is in Fulton Market.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want you to email in, and the first person. So you have one table for two. Now, I've just mentioned this on the radio. I suppose other people have seen this as well. How do I know if that's available still?
You don't. You have to be the first. You have to be the first, and it gets a little tricky with email because you might not get a confirmation right away.
Right, right, right.
But some places, especially everybody in the Alinea group, you know, Alinea and Royster, and as well as the Aviary and Next, they don't they don't keep a phone line. They do almost they do all of it online.
Wow.
Aviary books so far in advance, you know, you call Aviary.
That's right.
You got something for this Saturday? No, we don't.
Not only do we not, we don't even have a phone for that sort of stupid question. Okay.
Well, it's not so much that. It's just they realized they were using a person sitting at a phone full time every day in, day out, and 90% of what those conversations were, I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, right.
And restaurants, businesses in general, hate to have someone sitting around all day just telling customers no.
I never thought about that. Well, a lot of these restaurants do have phone numbers. Let's just walk through some of them with Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. Oh, and also, I found a place that Phil has written about before, which I thought was fantastic for a drink and for some food. We went there with the Petersons the other night. Phil, give me your affirmation on this. We're talking to Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. By the way, we were having that conversation with a friend of ours who makes that Whiskey Acres bourbon and whiskey. Hey, John, pour that bourbon barrel maple syrup on Brussels sprouts. I suppose that sounds terrific to some of you that like Brussels sprouts. Phil, are you a fan of Brussels sprouts?
Actually, I am. I do like them. My wife hates them, so I don't get them very often at home because it would be just me.
Well, and they're odoriferous, too. They tend to take up a little space to me. No?
Yeah. Well, it's in the cabbage family, so it's super healthy for you. And but there are consequences.
Let's just leave that there.
Yeah, let's just leave that there.
So Phil Vitale and our friends at the Chicago Tribune have been in the habit of asking the best known and some of them less well-known restaurants in the Chicago. Is this the city or the Chicago area, Phil?
In Chicago area, I have a nice good dozen or more suburban restaurants that are participating in the Save the Tables.
Save the Table for Phil Vitale, and then he prints online right now. Mm-hmm. The email address or the phone number from these places and say, what do I say? Is there a code word or something?
You ask for the Phil Vitale table.
And then if it's still available, lo and behold, you've got reservations at Alinea, at the Aviary, at Boca, at Band of Bohemia, at Italy, at Georges Trois, at Mako, Good Grief, Next, Nomi Kitchen. Well, you got them. You got all the big ones there. But that's,
we did a nice job. We didn't know we had some. We had a really, really nice lineup of restaurants that wanted to play the game this year.
If you wanted to go a little more affordable, though, because it looks like you've got them priced by categorized by price, right?
Right.
So those are the highest of the high end, Spiaggia,
right,
etc. But then in the next group down, you've got ABBA, you've got Avec, Bar Biscay, Benny's Chop House, Cherry Circle Room, the list goes on there. I'm just going to turn the page and get to one other price group. Boy, this is a who's who of restaurants in Chicago. Good for you, Phil.
Thank you.
$74 and less. So that means Bar Roma, Bar Sienna, Beatnik on the River, Beatnik Westtown, Beatrix, Black Bull, and that's just the B's, and on it goes. Wow. What jumps out at you here? Is there one that, or a group that you would say is especially helpful or noteworthy, Phil?
No, well, I'll say this. For people who are interested in steak, I've got about a dozen steakhouses among the 160 restaurants in there. We've got fun places like Virtue and Hyde Park. We have you can go to La Serena Clandestina at the corner of Fulton and Morgan, and this is going to be their last night in business. John Mannion, who also has Elche Steakhouse over on Washington, but he is closing his restaurant up at the end of the year. And then over by Wrigley Field in the Billy, there's Madden's Post, a restaurant that I kind of have to think is going to have a new name by the start of next season.
They said they weren't going to. I thought you said they weren't going to change it, but
they have said that, and I just don't believe it. I think it's going to change. You know, depending on the language of the, Well, you know, if Joe Madden has has some profit participation in there, they might have. I don't know. Maybe have to buy him out or something. I'm making things up right now, but yeah, contractually there may be some complications. Just saying, we're now changing it
right,
to somebody else.
Yeah.
So
I get that.
Yeah.
Parachute is on your list in sort of the mid-range priced restaurants. Pizzeria Portofino has been one of the toughest tickets to get. Good luck. Hurry up. Email them right now if you want to get a table for four and a table for six at 6 p.m. with the regular menu at Portofino.
And one of the fun things is if a restaurant happens to have another table available, not one they've particularly saved just for me, if you are not the first caller or emailer, they may say, well, no, I can't give you that table, but
right.
I have a 7:30 you might be interested in. So just because obviously other people have gotten there first, possibly, don't be discouraged. You might there might be some alternatives. And also,
all right.
I'm running out of time. There are 160 of them.
We're running out of time. So chicagotribune.com/dining is where I find the list, right?
Right. Unless you get real complicated and you go dining/CT-food-save-the-tables, and you'll get it faster that way. But chicagotribune.com/dining will get you there.
Chicago and the suburbs. By the way, the restaurant I was referring to, I'm out of time now, but I'll just mention it to you, and you can tell me if you agree with me or not. The Firehouse on South Michigan Avenue, if you are, say, down by Soldier Field or the museum campus, I thought that was terrific. I was there for the first time. We had some drinks. We had some food. What a great old Firehouse restaurant and wonderful bar. It's a good room.
It's a gorgeous space. They did a really good job converting an actual firehouse. You can still see the brass poles in the bar area. No, they do a really, really good job. There were a couple of years back, they had a fire, and so they were closed for a number of months, but they're back, and everything is gorgeous. And they're actually one of my participants this year as well.
Oh, no kidding. Well, then good luck to you getting tickets for that. The waiters wear white jackets with black ties. It's not stuffy, though. I just thought we had a really nice time at the Firehouse on South Michigan. All right, Phil Vitale, a pleasure to talk to you. My best to your bride and your family, and you have a good holiday, sir.
Okay, you too.
That's Phil Vitale, chicagotribune.com/dining. John Williams here, 630, texted in and said, the Daily Herald has reports from 1880. Weather has been this warm before. People weren't crying about global warming then. Somebody else said, John, I think it was warmer in 1984. We were talking about how warm it has been lately. Some of you are taking the opportunity to say, oh, shush, this isn't global warming. And some of us think, oh, yes, it is. Remember, weather and climate are different things, but as the climate changes, you do get changes in weather anyway. 773 said, King John, we drove around in our new Fiat. We named her Fifi, with the sunroom wide open yesterday, and asked, what strange things have you seen, done, or noticed because of the warmer weather the last few days? At Christmas, for crying out loud. 779, the dogs got baths, and they air-dried in our backyard in Peru, Illinois, because the weather has been accommodating. It's 1110 on WGN. There's a story in the Sun-Times a few days ago. Maybe you saw the headline. Pictures of three African-American men, and it said, meet three black Chicagoans who want to open recreational marijuana shops in Illinois. The upshot being that it's more difficult for blacks, even in some of the neighborhoods that these new retail points are supposed to serve, to themselves become the retailers serving those areas. For a lot of reasons, or maybe for just a few, but certainly one of them is preference was given to those with the medical licenses. These guys weren't that, but still. And then they tell the stories of these entrepreneurs. Vincent Normant is one, 57-year-old Englewood native, University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff graduate. He played football there. He served in the Marines. 2008, he says his knees were shot, but he was wary of pharmaceutical drugs, so he started using CBD. Therein was his entree into the business, but he doesn't have a retail point. Another one was Michael Malcolm, who has been keeping close tabs on the cannabis industry. He's a real estate broker by trade. He's 37 years old. He uses he writes the Weed Travel Food blog to create, it says here, a bevy of pot-centric content in his spare time. He is in our studio. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Michael, is all of that true, what I said about you?
It is.
So you're a realtor by trade?
I am. I'm an ad properties realtor. I've been working in real estate on and off since I was out of high school in 2000.
It also said this budding cannabis influencer. So you're one of those people who says, I know what influencer means on social media.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it in the cannabis area, but that's what you do, huh?
Yes, I'm not crazy about the influencer term when it comes to cannabis. I don't like to think that I influence people to use cannabis, but I like to think that I educate and I consult different businesses.
So if you post something about it, then maybe that, I don't know, brand or that kind of cannabis then experiences higher sales because you said it was good.
Correct.
So it's based on your personal experience. Are there side effects? Does it get you high? Where do you go mentally? I mean, is that what you write about?
Yes, most definitely. I look at it educationally, three things. I either educate on the product. So I'm either talking about the strains. It's this type of flavor. It's these two strains mixed together, which makes this different compounds. So I'm either talking about the product. I'm talking about the processes, how the strains are grown. Is it a hydroponic system? Are they using coconut grow medium? Are they using soil?
How do you consume these as you write about them?
So everything. I've smoked.
Edibles,
edibles, topicals, tinctures. I've tried a little bit of everything.
Do you have a preferred? Do people who are consuming marijuana now, they have a favorite way to consume it?
Everyone is different. And I think that's really the great thing.
But a person who's doing edibles would say, I just do edibles. I don't smoke. And some people who smoke don't do edibles.
Yeah. What I find is that usually people who don't smoke cigarettes at all or cigars, they usually try edibles first because they don't smoke. So they think that's the safest way. I actually try to warn people against doing that. Research has shown that people who aren't typically familiar with cannabis, they try edibles. And they have bad effects because edibles are so strong. And when you're not used to them. Yeah, typically.
Because if I were going to try, that's what I would.
I know.
I'm not a smoker. Never have been, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, what's a gummy bear going to kill
know.
Me? Not a good entree, you would say.
Well, I think it's okay, but I just think that people need to understand that the way your body digests edibles and it processes edibles is different than how you smoke it. When you smoke cannabis or vape cannabis, you feel the effects immediately, and you're going to be at the highest of your high, so to speak. You're going to be at that height at the time when you smoke. It's a little bit the opposite when you eat edibles. You eat edibles, it takes about 20 minutes to kick in. Many times people don't think that it's working, so they take more, and then that's how they end up in like the emergency room.
A lot of influencers, pardon the term,
yeah,
get paid handsomely for these product endorsements, essentially. Does this work that way too?
Yes, there's some of that involved as
well. So you're getting some money for your reviews?
Yes, most
definitely. Does it influence your reviews then?
No. Typically, I only work with companies that I really believe in. And again, at this stage, what I'm really more so into is not even just so much the influencer work, but just the education work. You know, this is a brand new industry, so I see it as an opportunity to build on that.
You're from Bronzeville.
I'm actually from Morgan Park.
Morgan Park. All right. So you're Southside Chicago guy.
Yes, sir.
Are you acquiring these products legally then?
I am. I have a medical card here in Illinois. I've had it since last year.
You've got a medical card.
I do.
Let's do that thing we did off the air.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I really have a medical card.
Because you do have a medical condition.
I do have a medical condition.
You have chronic pain.
I do have chronic pain.
Seriously?
Yeah, I had.
I mean, I think some people do that with a wink. I don't mean to.
No. I understand. No, I had knee surgery when I was 18 years old. It's giving me problems. I also have a hairline fracture in my ankle. That's a longer story. But yeah, these are things that I've dealt with. Back injuries from playing ball and things.
You also have a cannabis conviction, is that correct?
I do.
What's that all about?
Yeah, when I was, I think it was in 2003, I believe, I was driving. I had tinted windows on my car, and I had a little bit of weed in the car. Police pulled me over for tinted windows, smelled the weed. I got arrested. And
you think when that happened?
Oh, it was like the world was over. Everybody was, you know, I was embarrassed more than anything.
Did you think, how stupid am I to do this?
Stupid.
What made you think you were stupider, the tinted windows or the weed in your car?
Definitely the tinted windows.
Come on, man. I don't care if you got weed, but tinted windows says pull me over,
please.
Yeah,
that was about, it's funny. As soon as I got bailed out and I got my car back, the first thing I did was peel that tint off the windows.
I thought those were illegal in Illinois. Or...
They were. Like I said, I was stupid.
How old were you at the time?
I was maybe 20 years old.
Maybe it was a DWB, but maybe they didn't know who was inside.
Yeah, I was in the suburbs. It was the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's funny now, though. You know, everything for a reason. At the time, it seemed like a terrible thing, but now it kind of helps me with the way that the law is set up now in Illinois, you know, to potentially participate
right.
in the industry.
So think about this. I have many conflicting and complex views about who's getting the retail outlets and who's not.
Yeah.
But one of the things, tell me if I'm right, is that favoritism is granted to those with a previous conviction.
That's what they say it's going to be. You know, it hasn't happened yet.
Which makes
sense,
but it's also just kind of weird to me.
Definitely.
What is your thought about the granting of these licenses?
I'm definitely for those efforts. I think that it's great that Illinois went so far in their social equity efforts, more so definitely than any other state. I think it's great that we're the first state that actually passed it through state legislature. You know, it wasn't something that people just voted on. It was something that was actually, you know, I think was pretty well thought out.
Oh, really? You think that I've heard that point, but I haven't heard it. Explain to me why it's more important to you that the legislature in Springfield did this.
Yes, because there's a lot of moving parts to it, right? It's not like, oh, we're just going to sell weed, right? You have to think about everything that is involved, including the social equity components. So I just think that it was very important that the state did things like this is the first, I believe this is the first state that has not tied real estate to the application process. And what that does is it makes it easier for people like myself who maybe don't have deep pockets or I don't have a lot of commercial real estate to be able to go after the license on my merits than to say, oh, I have a place for it, or to force me to partner with somebody who maybe I would not have partnered with initially.
Still, have any blacks been given licenses in Illinois? In the Chicago area? I don't think so.
No. But again, that doesn't happen until the applications aren't even due until January 2nd, and we won't find out until like May. So
are you in line to get one of these?
I do have my application in.
To be a retail store operator, right?
Yes.
And would you put it in Bronzeville then?
Ideally, I would love to be in Bronzeville. Bronzeville, Hyde Park. I would even go to Morgan Park, honestly. Like, I would love to do it in my own neighborhood.
Stay right there. You may have seen the story in the Sun-Times the other day. Meet three black Chicagoans who want to open recreational marijuana shops in Illinois. One of them is in our studio right now, Michael Malcolm, a real estate broker and the writer of the Weed Travel Food blog. I got that right?
That's right.
Got about five more minutes or so with Michael Malcolm. We need to talk to this guy more in the future. Maybe you've already been following him as the Weed Travel Food blogger. His blog is about weed travel food. I don't know what it's about, to be honest with you. That's the name of it. So is it about food or is it about weed? You were telling us about weed.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
food?
Yeah, well, I'm a foodie. I'm definitely a foodie. And so for years, I always eat at different restaurants all over the city. I love traveling. It's like definitely those are my two passions. And people have been encouraging me to do a blog for a while. And I just never have done it. But with the cannabis industry becoming a thing, I thought last year for me to find my niche that way and incorporate the legal cannabis industry into my weed and food travels.
So what do you think about the rollout in Chicago? What's going to happen? How has it been going?
Yeah, I think that the city in general, I know they are putting forth a lot of efforts to help people. I know there's a lot of, you know, in the state as well, they're good with FAQs on IDFPR's website. I know a lot of people are looking for information on that. IDFPR has a lot of great information for people who are just interested in just recreational for purchase or to actually get into the industry.
So. Well, you were a big advocate for putting retail points downtown.
Yes.
Which was, this sounds like forever ago, but not that long ago, we were debating if that was a good idea.
Yeah.
And some of us had in the back of our heads this notion that it would be a grimy, dirty, dangerous place. And everybody who's traveled the country says, no, these places are terrific looking.
Oh, yeah.
They up the neighborhood. Oh, they don't bring it down.
Most definitely. Oh, most definitely. And, you know, my argument was, you know, because they were talking about, they're worried about congestion. The city of Chicago will start worried about congestion. This is Chicago. I mean, we line up for donuts. We line up for popcorn. We line up for iPhones. People line up for hot dogs.
Ubers.
The donut vault over on Wells, they have a line every day. Like, we line up. So I don't see a problem. And no, I think it's going to be a tremendous benefit to any neighborhood that they go into, for sure.
There's something that bothered me. See if I can articulate this. That blacks were disproportionately arrested and suffered the consequences for pot convictions.
Correct.
So the state feeling guilty about that, or the city said, okay, well then let's give them better access to retail points in those neighborhoods.
Yes.
It just bothers me that the state on one day December 31st says it's illegal for you to have marijuana. The next day, they're going to help you guys sell marijuana so that they can tax it and make money on it. Yep. And by the way, marijuana isn't necessarily good for you. It's a drug. You get high. So the state is now in the business of pushing marijuana on the very people they were arresting previously. Why? Because they want to see them succeed, or because they just want their money now.
Yeah.
And I think that whole thing stinks. That's a limited view, but what's your reaction to that micro monologue of mine?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot in that. But one thing I would say, I'm definitely an advocate for the plant, and that's kind of how I like to look at it. I think that it's been labeled as a drug. At the end of the day, it's no more than definitely consider it a drug, and it has the potential to be abused. But one thing with me having my medical card here in Illinois that I've seen over the past year is that it really is medicine. So again, you may want to call it a drug, but again, it's really medicine. The people that I see in the dispensaries that I go to, they have real ailments that they're not trying to get high.
I'll grant you that, but let's just talk about the people that are there for recreational purposes.
Sure.
They buy it the way I buy bourbon.
Sure.
So, which is okay, right?
Sure,
I drink bourbon.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy marijuana, but
yeah.
I mean, that's what they're doing. That's who you're writing for, aren't
true.
You?
Well, both. Yeah, but yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, I just think in general, like I said, I think that the state has given, I think it's impossible for them to move forward with legalization without taking into consideration the people that have been negatively affected all these years. So is it a perfect bill? No, but it's a step in the right direction. And like I said, it's more progressive than most of the states that I've been to.
Well, it certainly is that. I mean, yeah. I like it, but then has it been working? Has it actually been favoring those neighborhoods?
Well, again, it's just like anything else. It's a great idea. We'll see with the application of the idea if it really helps or not.
630 texted in and said, or 815 did, does he offer an edibles class, as in a how-to? That's a good point, because you were saying, hey, be careful how you do this.
It's actually on my blog. It's actually one of the first.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's actually one of the first blog posts I put on my website was just, you know, trying edibles as a first time, trying cannabis for the first time edibles is a bad idea.
What is the average bottom line in dollars? 847 Texan. What's the bottom line to open up a cannabis dispensary in Illinois? Start to finish, A to Z. You want to turn key on a retail point. What's that going to cost?
Estimates are between $1 million and $1.5 million.
See, who has access to that?
Well, the state is helping people, and so the city as well. There are a lot of programs. There's low interest loans for this that specifically for this industry.
So are you going to have a retail point?
I hope so.
Really?
We'll see.
I mean, did you have one of the ping pong balls in the lottery where they were drawing out names and numbers to see
again,
who?
Applications are due January 2nd, and my application will be in. So we'll see.
Let's stay in touch then, Michael.
Yeah, most definitely.
It's nice to meet you. Michael Malcolm. So if you want to follow his blog, weedtravelfood, right?
.com, yes, sir.
Oh, and that's your URL as well.
Yes, sir. And they can find me on Instagram. Just searching my name, Michael Malcolm. It'll pop up.
Good to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you as much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, congratulations in advance. I think you're going to do well. He's already doing well. He's a successful realtor at
Properties.
At Properties.
Yeah, shout out to the guys at Properties.
By the way, as we wrap up that conversation about legal marijuana, somebody texted in and said, okay, so my company, Random Tests, I use. Can they fire me if I test positive? Sean called in with a little information on that. Hey, Sean, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Really quick, I work for a Fortune 500 company here in Chicago, and they have specifically told us, because they do random drug testing, that since it isn't federally mandated or regulated, that if we do test positive, we can be fired.
Wow. Just like the banks, right? If it's not federally recognized, then you've got problems, even as a legal user in your state.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Good luck to y'all. I appreciate the heads up on that, Sean. I guess it depends on your company, too, then, right? Different topic. James Percy's in our studio. And also, Joseph, I'm going to help me on this. Joseph, are you ready?
Go for it.
Maudsley.
Perfect. Spot on, mate.
These are the stars of Potted Potter at the Broadway Playhouse Theater at Water Tower, downtown Chicago. It opened earlier this month. It goes through January 19th, if you're a Harry Potter fan, or maybe you're not. I think you're going to like this show. In 70 minutes, you guys do all 7 Harry Potter books, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it's like binging Harry Potter, really. It's Harry Potter for the Netflix generation.
Oh, yes.
What about people who haven't followed Harry Potter? I haven't read the books. I haven't seen the movies. Can I enjoy this show?
You need our help more than anybody else.
Yeah, those books are long.
Yeah, the films are long. I understand where you come from. We understand it. Yeah,
Chicago's busy.
They're very busy. There's lots to do. There's sports and things.
Not anymore. Our teams are terrible. Maybe maybe after the Bears season, your sales are just going to go zoom. Although, I presume, though, it's the super fans that really love your show, right?
The super fans do love it, and they all come dressed up, which is exciting. Yeah, it's a very exciting experience.
Children, adults, what's the audience?
Everybody, like? From about six to Dumbledore, and he's really, really old.
I was wondering about the rights to this. Like, how can they do a Harry Potter theater show since the people that created it aren't the people that wrote the book, right? Did they get the licensing?
Yeah, the answer is they can't.
No.
We just, that's why
trouble.
We're out here.
Yeah.
We just keep running
moving,
away.
Keep moving, keep on the run.
You guys have been doing this for how long?
I've been doing it about 6 years now.
How about you?
Yeah, about five.
You haven't lost your accents, if I may say. You sound like you're from the UK.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's true. We're very good. I'm actually from New Jersey.
But are American audiences more tapped into Harry Potter than British audiences?
I think they are, yeah. It's the addition of everything being British. Like, in Britain, we're watching Harry Potter, and it's just like normal school. We wear uniforms, we're in houses, that's what happens.
It's not as enchanting to
you.
Yeah,
we don't study magic.
Did you not do magic at your school?
Oh, I must have gone to a rubbish school.
Yeah, Derby
used to study magic. But here it's charming. I mean, it's a whole other world
yes.
for us.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
So the shows have been running in Chicago for a month.
Yeah.
You guys did it in Vegas?
Yes, we were in Vegas over the summer. With a residency there on the Strip, which was exciting.
Yeah, no kidding. What did you think of Vegas?
It was intense. It's an intense place to be for 3 months. we found out, I mean, every, like, taxi that we got in, they were like, oh, you're here for, like, 3 days or something? No, 3 months.
You're making it sound long, like you were ready to leave Vegas.
It was. My body was ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between the heat and the alcohol, is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't say that, but you can.
Yes, exactly. And then what do you make of Chicago?
Oh, I love it here. Like, we say this, and it's like, it's we're not just saying this because we're here now. It's one of our favorite cities, and we've toured all over the world.
You guys have. You were telling me about your itinerary, but why? What's special about this town?
For me, I think it's the audiences and the way that you're trained to watch theatre and to watch comedy. So everyone in the audience is there to have a great time, and they, like, everyone knows how to watch theatre and get involved and just enjoy it. It's brilliant.
So you do the 70-minute long show.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you do all seven books of Harry Potter.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you to do a little of it for us. I know it's rapid fire, but I also know it's a little visual. Will this work on the radio?
We can try.
Like
a radio play.
Okay. Oh. So book one in 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, book number one, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Start the book.
Once upon a time, there was a boy called Harry Potter.
Hi, I'm Harry Potter.
He was 11.
Hi, I'm Harry Potter.
He lived under the stairs.
I live under the stairs.
Now, it turned out he was a wizard.
Ooh,
so they gave him a wand.
Thank you.
And an owl called Hedwig. Twit, twit.
Oh, a message.
Now, to be a fully fledged wizard, you had to go to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Of course, the only way to get to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry was to go to King's Cross Station, platform 9 3/4, and run straight through the wall.
What?
Run straight through... You're not running through the wall, James.
Not as stupid as you. Give me the book. Now, when Harry got to Hogwarts, he made some very good friends, the first of which was a young boy called Ron Weasley.
Your eye is Ron Weasley. I is sick. Blah. I is lit. I is wicked. For here am I, defying gravity. As a ginger ninja. It's me, Joe. I'm in a wig.
Yes, Joe, I can tell. He made another good friend, a young lady by the name of Hermione Granger.
Hello, I'm Hermione Granger.
Who was also 11.
I know.
Didn't know many girls when you were 11, did you, Joe?
I don't know many girls now, to be honest, James.
Makes quite a lot of sense. Now, unfortunately, as well as friends, Harry also made some enemies, the first of which was a teacher by the name of Professor Snape.
I hate you.
Ah, oh, he made another enemy, a young boy called Draco Malfoy.
I hate you as well.
No, Joe, look, we've only just started. You've really hurt me. Here, take that, take those. I'll take that. I'll be the bad guy for once. Oh, yeah, I'm Draco Malfoy. I'm evil. I like to go around hitting people, yeah.
Yes, I don't like you very much either.
Now straight to the crux of the book, the Sorcerer's Stone. The Sorcerer's Stone in question is something which the evil Lord Voldemort...
Whoa, you just said Voldemort. I've just said Voldemort. I've said it again. Shut up.
Thanks for your input. Something which the evil Lord Unmentionable needs to regain his evil powers.
It is I, the evil Lord Voldemort.
You said your own name.
Of course I said my own name, you stupid little man. How else would I get my evil soy latte from Starbucks?
Very good point.
Now I must get to the Sorcerer's Stone before Harry Potter. Here is the Sorcerer's Stone. Here is Harry Potter.
I got it before you.
No, Harry Potter has defeated me for the first time.
End of book one.
That's good. Okay, that works on so many levels, because I haven't read book one, haven't seen the movie.
And now you know.
And now you know.
I love the patter. I love the rapport. I love the timing of that. That's funny. And by the way, it does work as non-visual, but visually, it's even funnier.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's good stuff. Do you worry about the timing of it because it goes so fast? Like you can't, if you drop a word, if you step on each other,
yeah.
Does it kind of kill the vibe?
Well, I love those moments when things go wrong because of the freedom we have with it and everything. There is no fourth wall. If anything happens in the audience, if anything happens on stage, we roll with
it. You play with it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You are not safe
and
in the audience.
And it keeps it fresh. It keeps it fresh for us as well, really. It keeps it really exciting. Every night feels a little bit different, and it feels like opening night every night.
This is a show that is running through December or through a January 19th at the Broadway Playhouse Theater at Water Tower. It's Potted Potter. And in our studio, James Percy and Joseph Maudsley. You throw an R in there.
Yeah, I think it's the British accent. I'd say Maudsley.
Maudsley.
Yeah.
But it's spelled
M-A-U-D-S-L-E-Y,
yeah. Right? Maudsley.
Perfect.
Maudsley.
Like, I would like more cucumber sandwiches.
Yeah, but Slee.
Can you guys do American accents? Could you, if you weren't doing this?
Yeah, but I can only really sound like a radio presenter.
Oh, I can do
offensive.
Good evening, you're listening to WGN Radio.
Can you do that?
Mine's borderline offensive, I think. Yeah. Without the borderline.
That's all right.
It's funny about how many British actors play characters who don't have British accents, who are in, say, American dramas, and then you see them on a talk show and you go, holy cow, listen to that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is, but you guys seem to be getting all of the good gigs.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I was speaking to an American actor about this, and he wasn't thrilled about it, I must tell you. But the talent is there. Nice going, guys. It's nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you.
And you can get tickets by going to BroadwayInChicago.com. BroadwayInChicago.com. What a pleasure. Good luck, and stay in Chicago. Don't
leave. We would love to. Yeah.
I'd love to visit with you guys again. This is our Bright Side of Life segment. It's sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. This is where you call in and tell us something good in your world. We first play this song.
Some things in life are bad.
We do this on Fridays.
They can really make you mad.
You weren't here last Friday.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
So call me now. I have one line.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
What's your good news? Did you have a nice Christmas? Are you ready for the new year?
This'll help things turn out for the best.
312-981-7200.
Always look on.
We whistle at this part. Here we go now.
Always look.
Lauren Lapka's in Traffic Central. Lauren, you want to play? You want to go first? What's your bright side?
My bright side is for the first time in several years, I've had my whole immediate family together for the holidays, and I've been able to be home celebrating the holidays because, you know, I've been living away. So it was a really great, great time.
What a nice time for you guys. Well done. I'm glad to hear it.
Just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing.
Who's that in the newsroom? Jordan, is that you?
That's me.
What's your bright side, big boy?
Bright side is that 2 weeks ago, my wife and I were able to move back into our house. We had a fire in January. We'd been out of our house all year, and we're back.
No.
Our house is great now.
Since you've been back at the station, you haven't mentioned that. I didn't know. Maybe to do others. I didn't hear that.
I didn't really talk about it much on the air, but I feel like it was a good thing for this segment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God, what a... So where did you live for the year that you were out?
We were in an apartment in the city. But
what a fight. So everything's good now?
Yeah, everything looks great.
My bright side is we spend more time with my sons and family than we have in many holidays. We did so many fun things over Christmas. That's the first part of my bright side. The second part of my bright side is it's over.
Always look on the light side of life.
312-981-7200. You call or text.
Give us some good news. Tell us why you're smiling. Linda, you're on WGN. How are you?
I am good, John. How are you?
Good. What's your good news? What's your bright side?
My bright side is that my daughter, who's a physician assistant, who worked Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in the emergency room, is having Christmas with us tonight.
Ah. You know, that's weird, isn't it? But as long as you get together, that's the main thing, right?
That's right.
Happy holidays. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Congratulations. I'm glad you're having Christmas together. Your life is quite absurd. How about Margie? You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Margie?
Well, I spent most of my Christmas day at home until the evening listening to WGN radio. Whoever had the genius idea of having that old program on was great. I loved it.
Wasn't that fun? Brenda and I listened to some of that, too. My friend Steve Hayward called me yesterday from Strikes Baseball Academy, and he said he had a blast listening to those old black and white shows on WGN radio for Christmas. It was fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it was super. It was great.
Thanks, Margie. Appreciate you tuning in. If life seems jolly rotten. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling? What's your bright side?
Hi, John. I am in the process of driving transport of my 347th and 348th rescue dog this year.
Wow. Wow. What kind of dogs do you rescue?
Golden Retrievers for one organization and just any kind of dogs for another one.
So do you rescue them or are you the transport guy?
I'm the transport guy. If I was trying to foster them, I'd keep them all.
You're a good man, sir. That's important work. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, John.
Hey, Joe, listen, can I give you a Bright Side of Life pin?
Certainly.
I've got them from my friends at the Joint Relief Institute. They don't have their name on there. They don't have our name on there. They simply say Bright Side, and it's got a nice little bright star sun smiling, and it's perfect. We should all always remember to look on the bright side. Okay, so Joe gets one of those pins. My wife spends, and I do too, some time on the Midwest Dachshund Rescue. We've rescued some dachshunds over the years. And you've all got your teams, right? Some of you are into one kind of dog. Some of you are into another. And we are following the travails of many a dog on that website. And Brenda said to me the other day, what do you think about us being transporters like Joe was? And that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. So I said, yeah, I think that's a good idea. Always look on the bright side. Haven't done it yet, but who knows. Hey, Dee, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling? Dee, you're on the air.
I am smiling because my youngest grandson was just accepted at the Naval Academy at Annapolis. And he also completed his Eagle project, putting up a new digital sign at the American Legion here in Twin Lakes. So... something very awesome to be grateful for.
Well, will you give, how about if I gave you two of my bright side pins? Will you share one with the Eagle Scout for us?
I will certainly be very, very proud to. And I wish you and the entire family a very happy and healthy new year.
Hold the line, Dee. Stay there now. Elaine, you're on WGN. What's the good news at Elaine's house? You're on the air, Elaine.
Hi, John. Just calling to let you know we had a wonderful Christmas. Our 21-year-old grandson is in for 3 weeks from the Army and was able to spend Christmas Day with us.
If I give it to the Navy, I got to give it to the Army. Can I ship you a couple of pins as well, Elaine?
You sure can.
Happy holidays.
You too. To your family too, John. Side of life.
Hey, Tom, you're on WGN Radio. Why are you smiling, Tom?
Hi, John. Well, you know, I can never tell who's happier. I just finished delivering my Meals on Wheels to seniors, and I can never tell if I'm happier giving it to them or they're happier seeing me.
So you just, is that something you do every day or once a week? How's that work?
Once a week, yeah, once a week.
What neighborhood are you in, Tom?
Naperville area.
Oh, boy. God bless you, sir. Hey, listen, I'm not keeping score here, but each one of you has just been as inspiring as the next. Can I get you a Bright Side of Life pin too, Tom?
Sure, thank you.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Life, Happy New Year. 312-981-7200. I'm watching the clock. We got time for maybe one more. But all our lines are tied up, so maybe we'll just wrap it up here. This is what we do on Fridays. You call in or text. You give us some good news in your world. Tell us why you're smiling, and we will smile with you. I'm on the air at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Listen for yours truly and the gang. That includes Don Kleppen. Don just stepped out. Lauren Lapka's in Traffic Central. But always good to have his company, Joe Brand on Sports, and producer Griffin. Let's head down the hall. Ji Suki is getting ready for the noontime business lunch. What's coming up, Ji?
Hey, how are you, John?
I'm good.
Great to hear you had a great holiday. You know, we're going to be talking about doing those returns and exchanges safely. And then we're also going to be talking about those pesky robocalls and how you can make money off of them.
Okay, because they sure are pesky. I had no idea.